Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, what's going on, my man?
Nothing much, man. It's been pretty crazy in the fight world. I know we had a guest on last week, and we didn't get to talk about much, and then more craziness happened as the weekend went on. But before we move forward with the past news, just some quick current events. Mark Coleman, the Hammer himself, is currently in critical condition. He from smoke inhalation. He saved his parents from a fire at his house in Ohio. I think it was a rental property. I forget what the details were, but a dog woke him up in the middle of the night, and because there's a fire in the house, so he gets up, carries his dad outside, runs back inside, carries his mom out, who's already like a little bit burned, and then goes back in to save the dog. And going in there, mind you, he's 59, and gets smoke inhalation, and they had to send him helicopter to the hospital, and he's in critical condition right now. So prayers out to Mark Coleman. But I mean, talk about a legend. The guy just keeps adding to it, doing stuff like that. And you know, that we always talk about how the new fans just don't get why we get the way we get about this sport. And that's just a current event example as to why we get the way we get about the sport. And when people kind of like, you know, make it as like, if it's all fun and games, it's legends like that not only are they legendary in the sport, but they continue to be legends in their lives outside of it. And that's why we get in our feelings about it. But so hopefully he pulls through.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's terrible news, but you bring up a good point about this, because Mark Coleman going into that house is why he was a fighter, mm-hmm. because of his mentality, not because he grew up trained MMA and wanted to be a rich superstar and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He was who he was for the same reason he ran into that house mm-hmm. three times. It's because he is a fighter and he's a warrior, and Godspeed to him, and let's just make this happen and recover and you know, get back to worrying about a bad hip and all that crap again. Mm-hmm. Seems like it's been a hell of a run for the guy who you don't find anybody ever say a bad word about the guy. So let's try to keep it positive and hopefully we get to see him holding up that old pride belt again and UFC belts and just being proud coach and for everybody he was helping along the way. So yeah, definitely. You said it well. Best to Mark Coleman. Moving on from there, speaking of heavyweights in the modern area, we saw the linear UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou make his second trip into the squared circle for boxing. And the fairy tale has come to an end in rather brutal fashion.
My goodness.
And we all loved the story. The Fury Ngannou fight was fun and had its ups and downs, and it had its moments where we, as MMA fans, could kind of smile. But you know, I think anybody that really follows these sports knew that this was something. You know, I mentioned it the other night, like, well, you know, we might see a decision, or we might see him get waxed in, you know, 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. Kind of what we saw. He did go into the second round, but he got dropped in the first. Laser lightning shots, just a clinic of fundamental boxing.
You know, the funny thing about it, because of course they asked Dana White about it after UFC 299, which we're going to get into, but in the post-fight press conference for UFC 299, when Dana White was asked about it, I mean, he wasn't too much of a jerk about like trying to like shit on Ngannou while he was down, but he did say something that we all say when it comes to the crossover, the thing that keeps happening, MMA to boxing, like this is what happens when guys go from you know, the full fighting to the modified rule set, which is what boxing is now in today's era of combat sports. I mean, a lot of tools are taken away, and the way that you box in MMA is not going to be the way that you box against. That's why they call it the sweet science. I had this discussion with one of my training partners over the weekend that, you know, it's called the sweet science because there's so much more that has to go into. You think about the story of like the the blind samurai that's so much better in using his sword because of his other senses are greater. It's the same concept. You take away things that you're not that good at, but what you're able to use is the thing that's going to be surgically better than the people that don't practice that way. And it keeps happening in boxing. What if I don't know how long that what if Lucky Punch marketing is going to last. I mean, we're going to get into, because, you know, with the other announcement that came out in the world of boxing, but that we'll get into in a bit. But it's just like, how much more do we need to see that it more times than not, the person that spends more time boxing and you compete under boxing rules, it's going to favor the boxer. You don't really see that many people. It's very rare that you see the MMA fighter come into boxing and do well. So
no, and it was just, you can't, it's optimistic to think that you're just able to jump into another sport and go up against their best. I think there's plenty of guys. There's hundreds and hundreds of guys in Ngannou who could fight that would be competitive fights, which would be, you know, ups and downs for him, wins and losses, but nothing like we saw the other night. Anthony Joshua is on another level. It's really what Tyson Fury should have done. And I, you know, a lot of people, we talked last week about how some people claim that, you know, he kind of took the fight off and there was a, you know, back and forth, maybe a disagreement on that, but I'm wondering if this kind of opens that up to be more of a possibility now, because, you know, it's natural almost for Fury, because you think it would be like if Fury came into MMA, you just wouldn't expect what Ngannou threw out there, and he landed the punch and it threw that fight into chaos. And, you know, like I said, it became a fairy tale in a sense. I think it's kind of over. And honestly, the way it went over, I would prefer that Ngannou just kind of hang it up, take the money, go help the people of the countries he wants to help, become an ambassador maybe for Africa or Cameroon or you know, anywhere that he wants to, you know, be involved. President, the vocal president of PFL or whatever. But man, that was a brutal knockout. And if he does return, I'd like to see it be in about a year, maybe two. That was not normal. I mean,
no,
it was normal for combat, but even for combat sports, that was as brutal of a knockout as you'll ever see.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you watched any of the post fight, anything like from right after in the ring to the press conference where he actually said he didn't feel the punch, and he was, you know, they joked about it after, but he was like, I didn't feel it because I was knocked out. He was like, it happened so fast. I didn't feel anything, so I don't know what happened. I didn't see it coming. And I mean, and if he got dropped three times, the fact that he said that, you know, when Joshua was addressing him immediately afterward, even Joshua was concerned and said, and Joshua said, like, he would like him to not quit and stay in boxing, which not for nothing, Anthony Joshua, what a great sportsman he was right after. He didn't rub it in his face. He actually encouraged him to, like, you know, hone his craft, stick around and get better, because he feels he's good for boxing as far as bringing in new eyeballs and stuff like that. But I personally would like, because he did this whole thing with PFL, I wonder how obligated or how sticky the contract is that they're going to make him face Henan Fajeda for Heda's sake. I would think they make the fight. But I mean, there were people commenting too, like, now how dangerous is that? Because Fajeda's a knockout machine too. Granted, MMA is different, but like you said, man, I mean, if it happens, I mean, I know Don Davis was talking about waiting till 2025, and the fact that it looks like the money that they use to pay for all this comes from Turkey. I always mess up his last name, the king or the prince or whatever out there in Saudi that's funding all of this. So we're already coming, you know, where it's midway through March. They're not going to do it anytime soon. If they do the next Riyadh season, which would begin in October, maybe October or like you said, the beginning of next year, they make it happen. But how long are you going to use, make it marketable? Like they have to find a way to sell it. And the PFL they announced all their cards, so they have other things they could pump up in the meantime. But it's for Ngannou, I don't know if it's worth it for him to take another MMA fight. he's probably good financially if he never comes back to fighting again. But, you know, we never know what these guys, he's talking about Mark Coleman. I mean, if you choose this as your path in life to compete professionally, sometimes it's hard to hang up those gloves, especially when you hear the constant, you know, people doubting you and you're coming off a loss like that. I wouldn't be surprised if he does want to come back and get a W and then hang it up.
You're very well right. And you know, he might listen, Ngannou seems like a great guy, but to me, he started to come off a little bit cocky with some stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe this will be a little bit of a reality check. Maybe he goes back to the gym and he focuses on MMA and he becomes, you know, and he thrives for another 5-6 years, who knows? But he took, man, that finishing shot was one that you just, you know, in hindsight, the corner really let him down, not throwing in the towel after the first one, because after the first one, he didn't know where he was at. If you know, the camera really didn't show like his face until the replay. But when you saw the, you know, look on his face, kind of dismay and like confusion.
There's a lot of angles out there now. Yeah. That show.
Yeah. And it's all hindsight and it's hard to say throw in the towel, but you know, it was that last shot was, you know, I don't want to get it. You know, it was like Drago, you know, Apollo, you know, Creed. Like it was just a shot that was just like, I mean, it was crushing. You know, in MMA gloves, that's, you know, you're talking broken, you know, orbitals and skulls and all that stuff. That was how clean of a punch that was. So, you know, we'll see. Ngannou made a ton of money. You know, like I said, maybe the most. You know, I know Ariel Helwani touts it as this huge story, and it really is. It's one that we'll talk about for all time and eternity, how he made the run. And, you know, he had a good showing, and then, my God, he came back and got blasted, you know. But he got paid. And the MMA story, we'll see how that unfolds. But I just, you know, Vahey is an interesting opponent now after we've seen what he did to Bader. But it still is like, is it the moneymaker for him? I mean, does he take that fight if he's only going to make 3, 4, or 5 million, you know? I mean, it just seems like a huge risk to his legacy in MMA. It seems a huge risk to his health for what he could essentially make on interest at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you got to start to wonder like why or what his attitude will be. But I mean, like you said, props to Joshua for being a gentleman in there. He really played the Randy Couture role of like, I'm not going to make this entertaining. I'm not going to drag anything on. I'm just going to take care of James Toney. He's going to take care of Ngannou. We're going to prove how our sport does it. And we're just going to move on and we're going to make it quick and ugly. I mean, I feel like that's kind of the way he played it. Well, I'm not going to be disrespectful, but This is my home and this is my job and this is what I'm respected for. So, you know, I got to do my job get people to recognize who I am in the as far as, you know, the top or top two heavyweight boxers in the world today.
Plus, we talked about when we had Daniel on last week. We did talk about how, you know, Josh was already been on the side of where he underestimated someone and lost and had to come back and you know, come back from that loss to prove that he wasn't some like washed out or anything like that. And I think, you know, that's something that he carried with. He's probably not going to let go of. So he definitely didn't underestimate like Fury. Like people are saying, Fury obviously did. He's not underestimating Ngannou and he felt like he had to kind of underline and put him away that way so that folks don't, because imagine if it went 10 rounds or whatever, it would probably affect him, especially among boxing purists and fans. They'd probably be like, you know, why is he having such a hard time? He's supposed to put this guy away. So he definitely like as far as boxing and his career and his future, like not leaving any doubt. Now people are talking about like, you know, Fury's reaction to the knockout too was even kind of like, wow. Like he almost made a face like he was embarrassed for the way he could perform. You know, it was crazy. Kevin Nicholson dropped a comment just now. I hope Ngannou's knee is okay. He folded bad on his right leg with the KO. Notwithstanding. I mean, he didn't seem like anything that came up in the post fight press conference, and I haven't heard anything about it afterward. I feel like when folks get knocked out, if something happened to a joint that didn't actually like tear, maybe a little pull, you know, if it didn't bend the other way or whatever, like I remember seeing, there's a, I forget who's the guy that broke his ankle when he got knocked out in boxing years ago. It was a heavyweight fight, though. The images in my mind, I can't think of who it was, but like the ankle visibly broke, and you knew that it was over then because of the way he fell folded under his leg. But, you know, once they're awake and stuff, if they don't feel anything or say anything, I would assume he's fine. But like Matt said, I hope he takes some time off. Like, we shouldn't see him till October if they're going to keep doing Riyad money.
Speaking of the Riyad thing, like PFL needs to figure out how they're going to stand on their own. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had this, you know, we had Mark Goddard stop their main event for a splinter in the toe the other day. PFL needs to, they got to figure out their plan here. I know that we came out with some good fight cards down the line that we'll eventually get into at some point, but let's not rely on Saudi Arabia. Like, if that, the earliest I want to see that fight happen is New Year's Eve in PFL. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what, 9 months away. I mean, it's still sooner than I'd like, but no sooner than that. And why Saudi Arabia? Why weird times and hours? And you know, is your market Saudi or is your market the United States? And the, you know, I mean, that's the question we're going to, you know,
yeah, I
know where their money comes from.
Yeah.
But as far
that's
as
their market,
I guess that's their market. You know, the eyes are irrelevant, but that doesn't last in the long haul. You're not going to last with, you know, 8,000 people watching events.
I always think of like that movie Game Night where they talk about rich people, underground rich people fight clubs. Like, that's what it is. It's an underground rich people fight club. And the only people that they're making money off of are the rich people that are paying to watch it, you know? So
it's Bodog Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, we'll see. But it was a good run for Ngannou, and we'll see where it goes from there. Getting back to the MMA side of things, we did have the huge UFC 299 pay-per-view,
mm-hmm.
which went off pretty flawlessly. Good fights, good action, some nice knockouts, and a really good performance by Sean O'Malley doing what he needed to do against a guy, you know, a borderline title contender mm-hmm. caliber fighter. And he proved that maybe he's, you know, stay in the top five, or, you know, mm-hmm. stay in the 5-6 range, but, you know, don't call all the way up here. He did his job, did it, you know, and I mean, dominated him. Turns out he crushed his skull. You know, a la MVP. Speaking of good performances and fun performances,
probably
but overall,
the fight
a great
most,
night.
Yeah, that of all, I mean, the whole card was, I mean, there's something about these last two cards, and then they put a really nice trailer. We've been talking about the UFC 300 for a while. They put a really nice trailer together for the UFC 300 that I really did appreciate. I don't know, something about these last few cards has made me feel like I don't want to, it's renewed my interest in the UFC and fighters. Dustin Poirier picking up the win the way that he did, fighters like Michael Venom Page coming into the UFC. Like, I during the fight week, I wrote two stories on him for my MMA news before and after, and he's someone whose career I want to see him, how far he goes now, you know, just because of with the Bellator we knew it gone and now being run by the PFL, all these great fighters that were under their banner, he was one of the ones that were probably had the most marketability because he knew how to market himself. Love him or hate him, you know, now people were talking about how people called him a can crush or whatever. He just broke into the top 15 of the UFC. They released their rankings this week, and he took Kevin Holland's number 13 spot because of the win he picked up. What I like about it, especially, is that he recognized that he's got a lot of work to do if he wants to keep moving up. He admitted that as much because of the second round where Holland was going to finish him when he was mounted on him in the second round. The fact that he was able to get back to his feet says a lot about his preparedness and just martial arts is about evolving, right? No matter where you're at, whatever level you're in, you have to keep on training so that you continue to evolve in your art, regardless, you know, wherever you want to do it. And MVP looks like the guy that wants to do that. I know a lot of people want to see him in Wonder Boy. I saw him kind of say something on the MMA Hour, kind of not kind of knocking that fight off, but I see where he's coming from. But you know, the thing about the UFC, especially fighting at this level, it's the person that steps out of their comfort zone that's gonna evolve and do well. So we have to see. It's gonna be fun to see where he goes. So it's I am renewed interest in the UFC for fighters like him, Trevor Peak, you know, all the guys that are new and coming up and working their way up. Those are the people that keep me watching. And even Dustin Poirier, who people were saying was at the end of his career, and then he drops a finish the way that he did that night. The whole card was great. And there's a guy that was on the early prelims, Asuma. I'm sorry if I'm forgetting, flyweight. That's somebody that I'm like, I literally want to see him get into the fights with the Royvals and the Morenos, and you know what I mean. Like it's just there's fighters coming up that make this promotion still fun to watch. Never, regardless of the shit they do with the Full Send and the Nelk and all the other bullshit.
No, I think the reason you've been into the last two cards is because it's how you remembered the UFC that you got into. You remember that you could watch the fights and you knew, or you recognized people in almost every fight, and you kind of had rooting interest in fights, and the fights you didn't know people was some kind of rising superstar or you know, like you said, the Almabayev guy, and then you got Despang? I don't even know how to say his name, but you got a 6'8" guy with a 7-foot wingspan, and you're just like, these are the guys I want to see on prelims of fights. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that are the guys that, you know, I mean, you look up down the card, you got Kyle Phillips looked great against Munoz. Gamrot wasn't the most exciting fight, but he did what he did against a very game Dos Anjos, who came out and looked great at his age and after all his battles. Macy Barber, I mean, at some point, we've talked about her a little bit on here, and she had some injuries during our run here on the podcast, but she's someone who's right there. You know, I never envisioned her, you know, taking out a prime Shevchenko, but we don't have a prime Shevchenko anymore. We have Alexa Grasso, who's good, great champion, but I feel like there's vulnerabilities now that can be had by these fighters, and there's some openness to some of these divisions. Curtis Blaydes fighting back against Almeida. That fight started. I thought Almeida was going to wrestle him to death, and I thought we were looking at maybe the next kind of heavyweight star. Turns out that might be Curtis Blaydes. We all didn't know. He took two tough losses to Francis Ngannou. Yeah. He took kind of a fluke loss to Lewis, and that's, we kind of wrote him off.
That's one thing, and I forget who said it, so I apologize if I'm not citing them properly, but someone said something along the lines like the matchmaking on this particular card seemed like it was feeding a young to the older fighters, to kind of like have them use them as a stepping stone, and like, you know, that was shut down. Like Poirier shut it down. You just mentioned the Curtis Blaydes shutting down that guy, and I guess that's what made the card so exciting. Was like, there was a lot of these people that they could have won, but if the ones that lost were all legitimate threats to the people that beat them, you know. Antoine Willis has a good question here that I wanted to get into too. How do you guys think Topuria versus O'Malley will really go? I think Sean makes it interesting with his footwork and defense. He also has a solid chin. One thing about that particular call out that O'Malley had was, and he seems to be backpedaling on it a little bit, because, you know, he's got a fight with Mirab that he's kind of got to do, and the champ shit can't really keep happening. Like, this was your first, you've won the title and you've defended it once. Like, before you start trying to move up or whatever, you kind of need to. And Dana White kind of shut it down too in the post-fight press conference. You know, of course they have to see what fans want to see, you know, and where they can make their money, blah blah blah. But I think O'Malley should focus on, you know, you got a clear number one contender that you got to focus on, and let that happen first.
The Topuria that just fought Volkanovski, I think, lights him up. If that's the Topuria going forward, I think he's a tough out at 145. That's what I'd pick him to win that fight if it ever happened, if O'Malley's going up in weight there. But Peter Yan picks up a big win. I mean, you're right, like the kind of the, you know, there was a couple young guys, but for the most part, kind of the old guard kind of held their held serve this event, and I think that's what made it a lot exciting. And again, it brings emotions because you have connections with a lot of these guys. You've been watching mm-hmm. fight for, you know, 5, 10, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Poirier's got, you know, what is he coming up, 10, 12, 14 years, it seems like. I mean, it's just a long, long time. And then you got guys like Felipe Lins. I mean, he, all of a sudden he's on a 4-fight win streak, and, you know, mm-hmm. shame on me for not paying attention to that. You know, he had his little run over there in World Series of Fighting or PFL or Bellator. I mean, he kind of feels like he bounced around a couple of those things, and mm-hmm. He had a couple nice runs in the PFL tournament, but just kind of always felt to me like he was a little bit average. And then he comes to the UFC, doesn't get off to necessarily the greatest start, but now on a 4-fight win streak at light heavyweight, sure, he's, you know, but Kutalaba's, you know, in a stacked card, you know, that easily could have been a higher on a fight night, especially that's a co-main event. So mm-hmm. you wonder where that goes for him. You imagine he's, you know, he's going to have to move into the rankings here sooner than later and get a big fight. But I was happy to see that for him because I know he'd been through some ups and downs and kind of felt like, to me, like he had kind of washed out, but to see him go on a 4-fight win streak now is, you know, adds a little bit of different flavor again to these divisions. So, I thought it was a great event, fun event. Like you said, 98 was great, 99 is good. Hopefully 300 can live up to the, whether you call it a hype or whatever we want to call it at this point. I just want another card like we've had the last couple months. And I mean, regardless, we're going to get that because it's almost every fight you know somebody. So whether the fights turn out crappy or not, that's in God's hands.
Yeah, but, there's a few fights I'm really interested, again, like watching these people and coming in. The Holly Holm Kayla Harrison fight I really want to see. That's probably the fight that's most on my radar for that whole card. Obviously the Jim Miller too, because Jersey, you know, the Jersey connect.
And your boy Gagey's fighting. I know that's a fight you're kind of washy washy on, but when that door gate closes, you're gonna be locked in on that one. The new adding of Jalen Turner Moicano, hell of a fight. That's another fight that, like, you know, there's a lot that could happen in that fight. Does Moicano impose his will and get Turner down on the ground and exploit his advantages on the ground? Or does the lengthy Turner match lounge something and hurt Moicano? So that's a late add to the card, which is a cool fight. Moicano got all my respect when he took late notice against RDA, save a main event. I think it was for the Connor card. Maybe Connor Cowboy, if I remember correctly. So, actually, I don't know if that was the card or not. But regardless, the fact that he stepped in on late notice and did that and then put up a war with Dos Anjos was something that gained me as a fan for all time. But, yeah, good fight. You know, look forward to 300, and we'll obviously break that down hard and heavy when we start getting into the middle of April.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be watching UFC 300. Antoine's asking if we're going. Matt gets to Vegas more than I do. I don't even know if I'm going to get to International Fight Week because it's the week of my dad's birthday. So that Matt obviously is more important to me than going to a UFC events. But I'll definitely be watching it. I'm already making plans with my folks I trained with out here to kind of get together for it because it is a significant marquee card.
No, I would have liked to have done it. Probably not going to do a whole bunch of Vegas this year. I'm kind of lucky. I got a bunch of events happening around me in Southern California. So I'm going to take advantage of that this year. I'm looking to take my UFC money and probably go all in on the Sphere event just to recognize that I may have to spend half my life savings to go, but at least it'll be a different experience and something that I can, you know, that's kind of my goal right now. And truth be told, that my April MMA funds went to ringside seats for Knucklemania 4. So can't turn that down. Yeah. Mike Perry, Tiago Alves, LA, Peacock Theater, LA.
And that's a big card. Yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, there's only a few fights announced, but right now that's looking like it could be epic as hell. So, my money's – I'm just staying local, saving on gas, saving on travel, do that. And then, like I said, going to try to aim towards September for the Sphere for – Mexican Independence Weekend and a hopefully totally new experience for an MMA event. That's kind of what I'm looking at. I think there's supposed to be a couple more events at the Pond this year, or Honda Center, based off of what we heard prior to 298. So that could flex and change some things, but right now that's kind of what I'm looking at. So I think 300 is going to be a great card. The fact that you get to go is awesome, but the crew here won't be making that. We're going to do it sooner than later. We'll get the podcast out there, but yeah, it's not going to be this April.
Yeah, that's definitely not this April. I know they're talking about, because they did so well, the UFC in Miami, they broke their own like record as far as gate and financials and ticket sales and stuff. And someone asked about UFC 305, if they'd be coming back to Miami for that one. And because it did so well, I mean, Dana White didn't say no. He actually kind of he didn't say it, but the facial expression was like, that's not a bad idea, you know, because obviously if they know they can make more money when they go to someplace, and you know, that's the side effect of all the Apex cards. When they go someplace now, it's a big fucking deal for anyone that's really into the UFC. And you know, the people, like a third of the crowd was from Ecuador. You know, because of, you know, that went to see that event last weekend. So it's whatever they're doing, I mean, it's creating the demand for people to fill those expensive ass seats, and people are still buying the tickets and flying out to see them. So who knows? I mean, their international events aside, it looks like anywhere they go in the U.S., they're likely going to break some kind of record wherever they're at. Or their own record, obviously,
where they probably tickets ain't getting cheaper. No, the gates aren't going to go down. Let's put it that way.
That's for damn sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. But
what else we got? I guess we should also discuss quickly going back to boxing and, you know, the Joshua thing might be like we mentioned, being a wake up for some people. I think it might be a wake up for some fans too, because there's, you know, imagine being 14-year-old 5-6 years ago, and you know boxing is Jake Paul. So that kind of is a weird dimension that I would have a hard time living through and growing up with, considering the glory of fights that we grew up with in the 80s, 90s, you know, and early 2000s. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson,
July 20th in Texas,
July 20th, Texas Stadium.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't even know how to accept it, but I do know that I've had people bring it up to me in the last 24 hours that have never spoke about fights to me in my entire life. Yeah. So that was interesting. Listen, everything Jake Paul's done for other fighters, I'm 100% double thumbs up for. I think he's done great to make sure other people get paid. I think he's done great to, you know, to help rise like Serrano in the women's boxing division. I think he's done great for her. I think he's just done great for a lot of people. I think his undercard fighters tend to make good money, more money than they'd likely make fighting anywhere else. So props to him for that. I don't blame him for taking this fight with Tyson, but I kind of wish that smarter heads would have prevailed, because I'd have a different opinion if I didn't watch Evander Holyfield ice skate around a ring. And that's what I'm afraid of seeing. You know, the things that people have mentioned to me was, oh, I saw these highlight videos of Tyson and he looks great. Well, you wouldn't see
three, 4 years old. Yeah.
And you wouldn't see highlight videos of him if he looked terrible.
Yeah.
This is social media. They're going to chop up clips. They're going to make it look good. They're going to sell the fight, but
they're already trying to show old. They're using footage of him training for Roy Jones to say it's him training.
When he was with Shooter Box, right?
Yeah.
When he was training with
Cordero. Yeah.
Cordero. Yeah. I have a Cordero. Yeah. That was that's what I thought. I didn't think there was anything new. So yeah, we're looking at 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And again, training footage aside, you know, with what when we saw Vitor Belfort and Evander Holyfield, that was like, okay, this is what a 57-year-old guy looks like. You can't, I mean, he can throw a punch, but he can't keep his feet under him to throw it. The everything's off. You know, we're old. I go out to a basketball court now, I feel like I'm an alien in outer space up, you know, for the first month, you know, like it takes a while to get your feet back under you and even be able to run up and down a basketball court. So to do a boxing with another guy in there who's a lot younger than you, now he's not going in there against a prime Larry Holmes, but
no.
At the same time.
So, you know, the thing about it is like Mike Tyson has such a reputation from everything he's done. And against Roy Jones, him versus Roy Jones, that was a fair matchup because they were both, you know, past their primes. you know, semi-retired or whatever, what have you, or whatever you want to call it. And it was an exhibition.
Exhibition is the key word there. Yeah. They were trying to kill each other.
And I feel like the selling point for it is like, okay, it's still Mike Tyson and he probably still packs a punch, which he probably does. But the thing of the only positive I can take from it as someone that's been covering combat sports as long as I have, and that's a fan of Mike Tyson and doesn't want him to see him get hurt. They're doing it on Netflix. And as far as the future of watching combat sports goes, that could be that's a major move. Like, even Dana White alluded to it when he did the post-fight press conference, because the ESPN deal is coming to an end pretty soon. And while it looks like they might renew with them, other suitors are coming out. And, you know, live sports is something that's always going to keep people interested in your product. I mean, if you look at what it's done for ESPN, all these UFC events almost every weekend. I mean, most people that have an ESPN Plus membership are probably got it so they could watch these Apex cards, and it's something that's definitely that they have that they could push to anybody. And we've already talked about Prime Video with ONE Championship. You know, FUBU Sports has BKFC and you know, Fight TV also has stuff like that. But like, you talk about big names, you look at the big players, it's Prime Video, it's Netflix, and it's obviously the Hulu, ESPN, Disney, whatever conglomerate. Folks whoever gets the UFC, they're probably going to throw major money at them. I wouldn't be surprised if this is kind of opening the door for the UFC moving to Netflix, since it looks like the WWE's already done stuff with them. And, you know, the whole TKO thing is, you know, they're under all that umbrella. But I just think, he's talking about, this is a good point here. We just saw what happened when Jake fought Tommy Fury, an actual young boxer. Yeah. Yeah, so this thing about fighting the older boxers, I want to see what it does for Netflix and combat sports. That's the only plus I can take away of it. I don't like the matchup. I don't like this fighting old young guys fighting old guys thing. And I don't know. I just it's opening the door for a weird toxic culture that I just don't want to see. Like, I don't want to see some fucking Herb on the street trying to knock out an old man now. No.
You know what I mean? It only ends one of two ways. It either ends really good with Mike Tyson knocking his head off and we get to all laugh as old men and think this is which is probably like a 10% chance. But then there's like a 90% chance that we're going to walk away going, God, I wish I wouldn't have wasted my Saturday watching that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to remember Mike Tyson as the guy who couldn't get off the stool after 9 minutes. You know, I mean, like, that's what I'm afraid of. And you know, it happens with everybody. I mean, I cheered Fedor into his late 40s. You know what I mean? It's I'm as guilty of it as anybody, but he's not 57. Mm-hmm. And he was fighting a 42-year-old Bader, not a
29-year-old. He'll be 58 when they actually fight. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. But like you said, I personally think the UFC is just going to keep everything in house. I think they're too greedy to give anybody the opportunity to have any hand in anything they do, especially I think after some of the sponsorship issues I think they had behind the scenes over the last couple of years. You know, and along with them, you know, having Trump at all the events and stuff, I think that they're just going to probably just decide to keep it in house, go make their actual fight pass like they wanted it to be, which is just a pay-per-view ordering machine, basically. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. I don't know the politics involved with Netflix that much, but you know, if it happened, it would be cool. But at the same time, now you're going from a $7.99 ESPN Plus to a $20 a month Netflix, or whatever. I don't even know what Netflix costs exactly.
Yeah.
I think I get it free through my phone bill, or my cell phone, but. There's very little on there that I like watching right now. So maybe adding some, you know, even when they get WWE on there, at least there'll be something I can kind of flip through and just see how they manage to produce it. And if anything changes from what we're seeing, but you know, fights on it. I'd rather have it on there than when we're out with PFL, where I have no idea where the fights are still going to be at. did we hear Bellator and DAZN, or is that is that international only? It's going to be a shot clock, huh? The clock's going to be winding down.
You know,
wondering on that Saturday how we're going to watch the fight, huh?
They put out, let me, let me just check the press releases, because that's one thing. I was so excited about the matchups they announced for those next three cards for the beginning of the season.
The PFL ones. The Bellator card is the one that, you know, the Ireland.
The
one.
Funny thing about the card is that they all look like Bellator versus PFL card. Like, you know, Phil Davis is on them. Fucking Goichi Yamauchi, who tore his patella against MVP in his last fight, he's on one of the cards. Steve Mowry's on a card. Like, they all look like.
Oh, Patricky Pitbull. It's basically, but this is cool. Like, okay, like, let's not hang these guys out. Let's add these guys to your tournaments. Let's bolster your tournaments instead of having the same you know, I don't need to watch Chris Wade, Bubba Jenkins 19, you know, like, and I know Bubba Jenkins is on one of those cards. There's no knock on him. I just don't need him to, I feel like him and Chris Wade and some of these guys have fought 1,000 times against each other, in some of these tournaments. So, and maybe they haven't, but it just sure feels like we there started to be a nice run of like, I feel like I've seen these guys. Maybe it's just because they're on the same events over and over again. But I don't know. But I'm interested. I do like the PFL cards, and obviously we'll break those down. Several cities, San Antonio, Vegas. Was there another one in Texas? I don't remember exactly every city.
Chicago, Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see what they do. I do like the cards. I like that there's a lot of fights on them, and it looks like they're pretty stacked. You know, again, recognizable names on most of the fights.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be key for them building. Obviously, you got to build the Picos and the young guys. Yeah. I
think their cards with Bellator's roster. Yeah. Huh?
I mean, you know.
yeah,
you know, it seemed like that was pretty much a no-brainer. They essentially bought the roster.
Yeah,
as we talk about it on the anniversary of the UFC hijacking and buying Strikeforce and ruining that run of Epic MMA. I think that pretty much does it for the week for us. I know we'll have some big stuff to look forward to in the next few weeks, but. Until then, fans can follow us at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thanks for the comments, and have a good night.